But yeah, so in general, my goal in this slot is to outline the process of PSOC. This is something that I have a mild obsession with, which is talking about what PSOC is. So this is my somewhat executive summary of it in one paper.
Oh,
But what?
I found it. I found it on the first day. I see on the bomb shelf. I see this sheet.
Yeah, great. So what I want to do is go through a little bit of an outline and then show you how this plays out in the Hakdamot too of the Beit Yosef and the Rama and the Amshar Shlomo to their svarim, their respective svarim of Psak.
Is stock different than halacha?
Well, let's talk about it. So good. What does Psak mean? What does halacha mean?
How we live the Torah, I guess.
So this is so there's the generic use of the word halacha, which is like, yeah, it's hard to translate. It really is hard to translate. I mean, one of my chavrusas is currently writing a book on just on this term, is an introduction to halacha, like the term halacha. What does it mean? For some academic press somewhere. But so halacha, it's hard to determine, right? What it means, I don't know. It'll be translated as Jewish laws. It's hard. People think of halacha as practical. In the Gemara, halacha actually means not practical. Funnily enough, right? Because the Gemara explicitly says that something is not a psak. Just if someone says it's the halacha, that doesn't mean that that's a psak. What makes something a psak? At yomim lacha, halacha, lemaaseh. Right? Halacha is theoretical law, and the maaseh is that it's practical, that it's right, that it is instantiated in an actual case. Halacha is like the theory. What is the law? How do we turn on the air con? Oh, there, the air conditioner there. There you go. But what is a psak? What is an
practical
a ruling?
What? Yeah, it's a practical ruling, right? That's what it is. It is a practical halachic ruling, right? So we have, you know, there's like theoretical halacha, like what is the law in an abstract sense, and then there's like actual shailas.
People study halacha, they don't know what to do.
So I don't
That
you,
seems
you.
like kind of
So
oxymoron.
again, it's hard to figure out what the term is that they're using. But if I asked you, big adult, how do you decide how you should act in a particular situation? What do you do? Okay. What do you do? How do you are now Posek, okay? I've now dubbed you Poskim for the purpose of this for now, right? What? Yeah. And I ask Moshe a shaila, okay? Rabbi Moshe, or to follow all the Sharnov guys who are into this third person thing. What does Derov say? What does Derov say? Yeah. So what do you do? Right? I ask you a shaila, now what?
Think about.
What do you do? Okay, don't look at this. If I asked you, okay, you can look at this in a second. But I asked you, Moshe, okay, I have, as I got this morning, thereof, if it pleases thereof, I have a shaila, right? I have a ribbish shaila. I have a question about interest, okay? I have a shaila, you know, now what? Now what do you do?
Assuming I have knowledge in the area. I would.
What does knowledge mean?
So,
why'd you be very precise for me,
okay,
Moshe?
So I would check Bava Metzia where all the laws of Ribis are.
Good. The first thing, so Moshe would start and he would say, oh, I know that the laws of Ribis primarily in Shas are in Bava Metzia and Perek, Ezu Neshech. Right? What? Okay, what's everything? Let's see what Moshe would do. Let's see what happens. Moshe says, first thing I do is I open Bava Metzia. Then I learn all of Perek Azav. That takes me a year or so. Yeah, good, great. And then what?
Oh, that's not what I meant.
Okay, good. So what did you mean?
So, I mean, I would try to find, either I would start, if I know a specific, you know, Gemara that it pertains to, I would try to just start from the top down. But if I don't have the information, so for instance, I've never learned anything about Ribis, so I would probably check someone like Rav Moshe Feinstein or someone else who's poskened on it and see their process.
Okay, so Moshe here goes with two completely different models, which is, one, if he's already an expert in the issue, then he's going to start top-down, right? By which he means he's going to go to the Gemara, he's going to go to the Rishonim, he's going to go to the Achronim, he's going to go to whatever, and then he's going to posken. And if he doesn't know anything about the issue, then he's going to start from the bottom. He's going to look at some...
If he doesn't know anything about the issue, should he not be poskened?
blasphemy?
No. No, probably not. Right? But he's gonna but he sort of punted on that. He's like, I will check his whole process. Okay, fine. Good. That's a good point though. Evan says, whoa, what is this? What are you doing? Right? Well, you're getting all lumpish on me. Wait. Okay, first, I'm going to figure out exactly what's going on. But see, reality, I want to know exactly what's going on. This is complicated. First thing I do. Then what? Oh, then you don't know. You're like, reality, I could get. I could understand your question. Yeah, what to do with it? Mia down. Right? Was it implied? I don't know. Yeah?
I think practically, if it's a real question somebody's asking you, I would look at it. Yeah,
I'd look sure,
at
I got a Rabishali today. That's why I'm giving you the example. So you start from the bottom. Okay. So let's.
If you don't know what? If you don't know the area, you don't know
rough. Yeah. Well, you just said you have an easy solution to ask your rough. You don't know who your rough is. Okay, good. So, okay, good. Yeah.
If you haven't learned the area, you don't know which questions to ask. Right. So
okay, good. Right. So here, this is the problem. Right? Is we talk about halacha, we talk about psak, but we don't have the slightest idea. We never really thought about it as a system. Like, okay, well, what do you do? Like, what is psak? What is this thing? How do we get to answers? I mean, you know, you're like, well, I'll read the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, well, where did the Mishnah Berurah get his things from? Like, what did he do?
But like,
what did he do?
He studied Shas.
Sure, you wouldn't know that if you read the Mishnah Berurah.
No, but I know that he did.
Yeah, he never talked about. First of all, he doesn't. He only writes about Rochaim. But second of all, how often does he quote the Gemara?
But as a rule,
not never, but very rarely. Most of the time, he's like, "Well, this is the consensus: the Magen Avraham and the Taz from Gadim and the Machta Shekel, whatever." Right? You wouldn't know. I mean, you would know because you would know. But like in the Ber Halacha, here and there, he has analysis of the Gemara. But the truth is that he doesn't. Right?
Wait, does the Ramah have a what do you call it, a Gemara?
He did on certain Masechtot. We've lost most of them. We have like certain manuscripts here and there of passages, but not like we don't have a systematic Parashat of the Rambam on Shas now. So here, what I want to do is I want to give you first a snapshot of what I think is going on. Okay. So I Lidati, this is what a posig does. Okay. First thing a posig does is okay. I don't know. First thing. Let's not order it for a second. There are three main sources of data that a posik has. The first is what I call the canonical sources. Okay? These sources, or you can call it primary sources. Now, what makes something a primary source, a canonical source? No, what makes it that? Not what is, well, not an example, what is it?
We accept it.
Accept it as what? We have to be very careful. Sure.
As the will of God.
Sure. Is the Mishnah Berurah canonical? Is it?
No,
why not?
Divine Torah.
Good. So tell me exactly what makes something canonical. Is it because it's divine?
Yes.
Sure. Tanakh, yeah. In theory, sort of, right? Meaning, yes, it is the basis of our psak, but how many poskim, when they start poskiming, start making drusha out of the psukim themselves? Okay, good, right? This is an important point. So what makes something canonical? So now I want you to clarify. What makes something primary? No, because the Tanakh is clearly primary in the sense that everything comes from the Tanakh. We get that, right? But when you're actually poskening a shayla, let's say you, Rabbi, has decided you have a particular approach to drasha, and you think the Gemara is wrong, right? What? So what makes it primary? I want you to define what makes something primary. What? That doesn't make it primary. No. So there's two questions here. Not what gives it its authority. How do you identify the sources that we treat as primary? Not why they're primary. How do you identify the sources that we treat practically as primary?
Those closest to the...
That's why. Wait, how can you tell me? How do you know?
There is no subjective way to know.
There is actually a subjective way to know. There is an objective way to know. There is a way to know. I'm asking you. What is the difference between a primary
without
source?
Without looking at the community's practice, there's a way to go. Right?
That's how do you know? What identifies a primary source?
It's nothing. Nothing.
That's not true. I didn't ask you how you know what, I didn't ask you how we got there.
That's what I think the nature of a primary source is.
Is what?
Is that it's fundamental to a community.
In what sense? Fundamental in what way?
Is that the explanation of the law rather than...
And therefore what? Come on. Push it. Come on. What's important?
Not based on
other sources.
Yeah.
Yes. Meaning that's what a primary source is. Meaning a primary source is, or I'll put it differently. The primary source is the sources which we take as
objective,
as the basis of our psak, to which all other sources must answer. Right? Oh. That's what makes something primary. Right? Primary. Well, I didn't say that yet. Right? But primary means the source, meaning the difference between a primary source and an interpretation of the source is very simple. Is that if, let's take the Gemara, right? Let's say the Gemara is binding, right? Is the primary source. That means that the process of psak will in some way be contingent on interpreting the Gemara.
Right.
And if anybody would, any source, no matter how important they are, would come and could not be justified with the Gemara, right? That source would now be wrong, right? That's the fundamental difference between a primary source and a secondary source, or which sources do we consider those to which everybody else involved in the process has to answer and explain why they're posking in light of that. That's what makes it primary. Right now, we can ask important questions, which is, what is primary? What? For my purposes, yes. Meaning canon in the sense that these are the unquestioned canon. Right? This is what, when you have to, like, everyone must answer to these texts. Right? That is primary. Now, there's a lot swallowed in that, because what's primary? Right? So, sure, for Orthodox Jewish psak, the Gemara, Bavli, definitely has that status, right? Where everybody, any posig ever, will always try to at least justify their psak in light of the Bavli. Wow. That doesn't say why, it's just a fact. Why is a big question, right? But we'll posit that, but Evan is right. To fully understand this, you'd have to say, well, why? How did we get there? Why is the Bavli so important? That, but I think if you asked pretty much anybody who feels bound by halacha, they would agree to that. After that, it gets more murky. So, for example, Yerushalmi. Is Yerushalmi canonical? Well, is it a primary source? Depends who you ask. For many poskim, it's like, that's nice, but they don't use it as a source of psak. You ask the Rambam would say, Yerushalmi is one of his primary sources, unless at the margins when it might argue on the Bavli, and then the Bavli might have precedence. Maybe. And even there, it's not clear, right? Rav Gorin claimed that there were many, many places where the reason the Rambam doesn't seem to follow the Gemara is because the Rambam is following Yerushalmi. Not everyone agrees with the Rav Gorin, but okay. Midrashe halacha, you have to ask. But and if you look here, right, I gave you in under this, right? You have to ask. To fully understand, you have to ask, why is the Bavli binding, right? Now, Tanakh, we said, is Tanakh primary? Well, it obviously is in a certain very fundamental sense, is we think our law comes from Tanakh. But if I mean this not in, like, the ontological sense, I mean this in the practical sense for a posig. Right? Meaning in the ontological sense, obviously Tanakh is the source of everything. Yeah. But, right? But in a, but, very good. If we had a Sanhedrin that was making drashot, then Tanakh would be a live primary source. Right? But now, in general, almost no posig will ever make a drasha against the Gemara halacha. Right? And there's a machloket whether in a case when the when Chazal don't weigh in on something one way or the other, whether it is legitimate for us to derive new law or adjudicate law from Sukkim. Right? So, no, that's not what I mean. Why would that be reform? See, this is where it gets tricky. In an ontological sense, it's clear that Tanakh is the primary source. Right. But I'm asking you, practically, is if you ask a posik and the posik says, I will tell you why I pasuk in this way, because I think that's what this pasuk means. Yeah. Chazal don't say one way or the other. If they say Chazal said the opposite, everyone's going to say, too bad. Yeah. Right? But if they say, I have a drasha in a pasuk, then what? Do we listen to it?
It's weird. Probably not.
You know, that meaning is
yes or no.
You don't listen to it for the reason of it being a drasha.
Do we?
It could be that.
Is that true? Yeah, I'm asking you.
I would define.
Nowadays, if they were to make that drasha, I don't think so.
So that's what you brought up. So here's, and again, each of these requires analysis, but I would tell you very simply. There is this wonderful, there are these wonderful places, both in the Yad Malachi and the Stichemet, where they're like, there is a rule. You are not allowed to make new drasha from Sukkim that Chazal didn't make. And then they do this very helpful thing because they're encyclopedic. And because of this rule, which is obviously true, how could all these Rishonim do this? And they give you a list of like 200 sources. Kasha. And you're like, thank you for doing my homework for me, right? But, for example, the Rambam, left, right, and center, makes up drasha that are not in Chazal. Right? They're not. Right? The Netziv comes up with new mitzvot. New mitzvot. Chalal. Right? Right? The Gemara says there's two mitzvot around Kibbud Avim, Kibbud and Mora. The Netziv says, there's a third one, Makle. The one in the Klalot is normative. It has separate valence, separate implications than Kavod and Mora. You'll say, how can he do that? I don't know. He's the Netziv. You'll say, it's an outlier. Okay, except Rav Avadia quotes him, right? Right? Rav Moshe Feinstein randomly will quote cases from Or Sameach where he goes Mezhar Chacham, where he makes drushot straight from Sukkim, even in Nach. It's a live question. Yeah. Now, another question. What about Kabbalah? Is Kabbalah canonical? Well, depends who you ask, right? Meaning, this is a major question. Right, and when we say Kabbalah, what do we mean? Do we mean Zohar? Do we mean Arizal? Do we mean whatever? Right? What about Agadah? What about Agadah?
Agadah very often uses Agadah to teach halacha.
Well, does it?
But the
Yerushalmi says Ein lemeidin min Agadot. We don't learn the halacha from Agadah. The Yerushalmi says that. Right? Very good. But sometimes we do. Very good. So. Yes. Very good. But. So this is the problem, right? The first thing you have to do is you have to find the primary sources because you have to answer to them. But that is easier said than done because the second you say the primary source to which we have to answer, the only text we agreed on now, not ontologically, but practically, is the Bavli. After that, Yerushalmi, maybe. What about the Agadah to the Bavli? I don't know. What about Kabbalah? I don't know. Tanakh, can you make Midrash out? You all said obviously no. That might be true, but it might not be true, right? Okay, Evan didn't say obviously. Okay, good. But the first thing you have to do is you have to identify those sources to which we all answer and analyze them. Good. Factor one. Second factor is, right, as some of you mentioned, is not that, but is precedent. What did previous poskim say? How did they interpret the canonical sources? And that's why you said, I would look at Mishnah Berurah. Right? Now that is evidence of introducing precedent. Right? Now, that sounds easy. But it gets more complicated because, okay, we can all basically agree that when we are involved in the halakhic conversation, it is important for us to be aware of what previous poskim in the history of the world had said. We all agree? Great. Now what? So we need to know what they said. And now what do we do? Which do you follow Rove? Do you...
It's a sense. You have to have a sense.
So you say it's a sense, right? I'm not arguing you do, but what sense, right? No, we all can agree that precedent somehow matters. How does it matter? Do you follow Rove? Are there certain postgim that you care about more? Do you give more weight to Rishonim or more weight to Achronim? Right? Do you give more weight to Rishonim or Achronim?
Well, I would say that you have to understand what the argument actually is before you can create.
So you're such a primary source person. You're like, so Moshe's like, no, I only care about the precedent because they help me understand the primary sources. But if you're a Rav Avadia, right? When you read a Tshuva by Rav Avadia, is that what it feels like?
No.
Hell not. He's like, he gives you 3 million sources and he says, the king goes. Now, is he actually making an argument? Of course,
we're not making like a fantasy bracket of like which side is which and then the rogue wins and that's
so that is basically what he claims he's doing. It's not what he's actually doing, but it is what he claims he's doing. And certain, but then you have to figure out Rove. Well, how do you figure out Rove? Rove of who? Rove of everybody you've read? Rove of anyone who ever existed? What if it's a Rav and a Talmud? Do they both count? Do they count as two or as one? What if, is it only written psak or oral psak? But these things quickly, right? And what if you're Ashkenazi? So do you give more weight to the Rav? I don't know. Right? These things get very quickly, very complicated. Okay, good. But the second thing we can big out all agree on is precedent. Yalla. Okay, good. Third thing is custom, right? Custom. Now, what does custom mean? Well, I don't know. There's different types of custom. There's custom, which is lived practice. Exactly, right? So there are customs that are kept by the people, but aren't necessarily sanctioned by poskim. There are minhagim, which reflect a particular halachic tradition, right? So the minhag supports halachic tradition. You know, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik likes distinguishing between minhag and nohag. Minhag is like more formal, and then nohag is just like, what do people do, right? These all have weight, but how much weight? When do they have weight, right? These are all complicated. But, so the first thing I say is that the first three things that every posek is going to do, right, big adol, is they're going to try to figure out what the primary sources say. But as we saw, there's like a million machlokot what counts as the primary source. The second thing is that they want to get a sense, as you say, of what previous postmen have said. But
that's not what I meant by sense.
Fine. But that's how I'm going to use it. Okay. Right? A sense. No, right. But different postmen will give it different weight. Right? And the third is they're going to figure out Minog. But again, Minog means a different thing. Now, why do I think it's important to say this? Because each of these is so unclear. Because I want you to understand that every posek, more or less, is there is a certain common denominator in what they're doing. Right? Every posek, I think, if you try to boil down what they're doing, is trying to do these three things. Is one, what does the Gemara say on the topic? Two, how have previous posekim understood it? And three, what does the custom reflect? Now, how they weigh each of those factors is very different. So, for example, a posek like Moshe, right, who comes from the good Brisk or Litvish tradition, is going to be, like Moshe Feinstein, let's say, or the Gra, is going to give a lot of weight to how they understand the sugya. And the other two factors are going to get less weight. Less weight, not no weight, but less weight, right? Now, is there a breaking point for him? Probably. I don't know. Maybe not. But I assume that if Moshe was very convinced that a sugya said something, but every posek who ever lived in the history of the world said the opposite, he might question his interpretation of the sugya. Might. I don't know.
That's why I can't wait for, like, Shailos and Tumas Mace and then Nagayim, and then all the poskim that have never answered anything will have to go back to
Baruch Hashem, right? And then, but so there are poskim like Ramosha Feinstein, let's say, who you read their Shuvot, it's clear that they give, right, that their main concern is how do I read the sugya, right? And then obviously they're going to quote, like they're going to quote Rishon and they're going to quote Shulchan Aruch, but like you get the feeling when Ramosha's writing or Chazon Ish is writing that, like, in a many sense, what he's telling you is this is how I read the sugya, that his view is very important. Ravadi, you don't get that feeling, right? Ravadi, you don't get that feeling. What matters to him most, again, to care about the Gemara, of course, cares about the Gemara. Right, but when you read Rav Avadi, at least your first glance, you're going to say, "What for him? What's dominant is how has the halachic tradition interpreted this? Not how do I understand the Gemara, but what do I find to be the view of the right the poskim interpreting the Gemara? Right, certain poskim, let's say a lot of Hasidic poskim, it's like this. You read them and you get the feel that." The first thing they do is minhag. If there's a strong minhag, it's clear what the community does, that has a lot of weight. Then we might go back and try to justify in the Gemara, but minhag is a very, very strong power, right? So should you eat in the sukkah in Chutz Laretz on Shemini Atzeret? The Gemara says, yes. The Rambam says, yes. The Torah says, yes. Shulchan Aruch says, yes. Everyone says, no. Yes. Many people don't do it. If you ask Litvish Poskim, right, so you go to Toronto, you go to Kropotkin, right, Kropotkin says, all you people don't eat it in the circumstance of Sarah. The Gemara says, do it. The Rambam says, do it. The Torah says, do it. You should do it, right? And you ask Rabbi Grisman, who learned by some Hasidic Poskim, says, what do you mean, Minhag Yisrael Torah, right? My parents didn't, my grandparents didn't. You're going to tell Kol Yisrael that they're wrong. There must be a defense. What? But he's great. I love Ray Grisman, but he's very influenced, right? But he was very close to the Nitya Gavriel, who's a Popper Chassid, right? He is very influenced, and he'll tell you, no, like, right? But he will. Like, this is a Shita. It's a Shita. I'm not saying always, but he really will give a tremendous amount of weight. I say this with all due respect. Like, he's a really big Talmud Chacham, right? But it's a tendency. Now, again, I happen not to have grown up in that atmosphere, right? Where, like, Minhag meant everything and, you know, was the be-all and end-all. But amongst Chassidic Poskim, it really is. Right, not only Hasidic poskim, but many Hasidic poskim, you'll find that. Nidia Gabriel, that is the feeling you get often. Not always, but often. But every posek takes in account these three things, and then he weighs them. Now, he could weigh them differently. Right, again, it could be that a posek normally cares most about how he understands the sugya, but if everyone ever said the opposite, he's going to say, okay, I'm probably wrong. It could be, right? Right, or Minog, right? It could be that he'll say, listen, I'm pretty sure there's the sugya, but all of Kali Yisrael has done this for 500 years. Lo yacholiyot, I'm wrong.
Or there's like a time when Machlokas among Rishonim, and then, yeah.
It could be, but I'm saying, right, if there's a Machlokas, but I'm saying, there's a breaking point. Most postgame are somehow balancing these factors with different postgame giving different weight to each of these. So they're in conversation, but you can automatically see that when you do that, the weight, based on how much weight you give it, before we've even gotten to how you understand the sugya, right? Then you actually have to understand the sugya, right? But before you even do that, right, there's a question, okay, meta question. How much weight am I going to give to each factor? Now, obviously, if you care most about the sugya, you're going to spend most of your time trying to understand the Gemara, whereas if you care most about precedent, you're going to spend a lot of time trying to understand the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch and whatever, and really get to how they understood it, right? You know, Chanami. Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's Tshuva for sure, but Shulchan Aruch, you don't feel that so much. I mean, he has many books. He has the Beit Yosef, he has the Shulchan Aruch, he has Magen Besharim, he has Kesef Mishnah, he has Avkat Rochel. Shulchan Aruch, you don't get that so much. Not so many like places where he like goes off on a limb. I can't offhand think of one where he really does that. It's not his style there. Now, once I take these three things together, what do I generate? Now I've done this. Now what do I have?
Plausible.
A plausible psak. Why do I say plausible? Very good. Because psak, as the Ramban notes in his Akdama to Milchamot, psak or law is not like math. Right? There isn't. It's not like by the time I'm convinced the answer is right, I come and I say 2 + 2 = 4. Me'achus. If you say anything else, you're obviously wrong. Right? Usually, what you do is you come up and you say, aha, on balance, I'm like 80% sure that this is the best answer, right? I mean, that's what law is, right? You come to the argument, I'm like, look, I could see other sides. Now, sometimes you'll say, you know, it could go either way. I don't know. I don't know the difference. Like, it could be 50-50. I don't know. It's like when people ask me, how should I tie my tzitzit? I'm like, I don't know. I learned the sugya. I see no reason to preference any shita over any others. I have no clue, right? Like I have a decently strong feeling of how many strings should be tchelet, but how you should tie the tchelet, gewalt. Good luck. I look at it, I'm like,
gives a reason.
I understand. I read the sugya too, and I'm like, it could mean what the Rambam means. It could be what Rambam going means. It could be what the Rambam means. It could be like what the Gemara. I have no idea. I literally have no idea. None. There are other people in this world who have strong opinions about it. I have no strong opinion. I read it, I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm like, tie it? You should tie it. So what did I do? How did I tie how did I decide how I was going to do it? What? No, I did the simple thing for somebody whose, you know, family is at least technically Lidfish and went to Brisker Yeshivot or whatever. Grah. Yeah, very good. I was like, Grah. Okay. The other option was Ramba. But because I'm pretty convinced they should go by Ravid, they should have two strings. Right, not one like the Rambam.
My dad took
right.
I thought some people proof for one like the Rambam because they said you need at least 7 lavan in case you can't with kilos.
These sugya are complicated. By the end, I was more convinced that it was 2. Not that the other sugya are not possible, right? But I was more convinced that it's 2 and not 1 and not 4.
Right.
It
depends on your confidence in the tzuras, which
yes. And then I just said, okay, I don't know what to do, so. Well, Gra's a good default. So that's what I did. I have Rivet Gra. Okay. So there are cases like that where like you have no strong opinion. And then there are cases where you're like, I'm like absolutely certain that this is right. And anyone who says the opposite does not know how to read a Gemara. Right? And then there are the cases. What? Correct. Correct. And then there are the times when you look at it and you're like, I don't know, like, I'm pretty sure, but like, I mean, the others aren't crazy. I mean, yeah, it could be, right? And you could have a 60-40, you could have a 70-30, you could have an 80-20, you could have a 90-10. You could have all types of things, right? We have this in life. So now what do you do? Okay, so you have a psak. I call it the most plausible psak. What do you do? Now you have the most plausible psak. What do you now do? Well, no, first thing you do, what do you have to do? I'll take a normal case. No extenuating circumstances. Normal case. What do you do? No, you tell me. Don't look yet.
I mean, it's a Shiloh. It's usually not going to be like, you know, what? How many?
Is it a brand new
case? It can be.
Each person will attach a certain amount of weight to
I drop my spoon into my dairy. Yes, but what?
You apply it.
Good. Is that easy?
Well, it depends. If it's
I drop my spoon, then no.
But very good. So if you look at what I put here, I put normal case. In a normal case, there is this slight hitch, which is once I have the plausible talk, if there's no extenuating circumstances, like there's not a lot of loss of money, there's not a lot of stress, someone's coming to me and listen, I don't care. If I have to kosher my pot, I'll kosher my pot. If I don't have to kosher my pot, I won't kosher my pot. Big deal. Right? Like koshering a pot, a clean pot. It's a clean pot. Right? Big deal. If you have to kashrut, so boil up some water. It takes 5 minutes. Yeah. Done. Yalla. It's not a shot. There's no extenuating circumstances. Easy. It doesn't cost you money. It's not that time consuming. What? It's not always fine. It's often fine. Usually fine. Right? So then you just need to figure out the reality, which sometimes is easy. Sure. My spoon fell in the sink. So then you have to ask, okay, fine. Was it hot? Was it cold? Okay, there's like easy things. Sometimes it's easy, and sometimes it's brutal. Right? Sometimes it's brutal. Sometimes it's brutal for completely practical reasons. Right? Because it's just hard. Right? It's just hard to figure out what the material is. Right? And then you start getting into the nightmare of Sveikot. Right? Because maybe I just can't figure it out, so then I got to pause on Sveikot. Right. So then what do you... Right? Then it's not really a local shayla, it's a suffix shayla. And sometimes it's hard for more fundamental reasons. Like, who gets to decide? So like I gave you an example here. Shayla, very easy. On if I asked you, is someone who's sick allowed to eat on Yom Kippur? What's the answer?
Depends how sick.
Good. What's the standard?
If we're gonna say
what's the standard? It's very simple. What's the answer?
If she's pregnant,
no, what, that's not the standard. That's not the standard. Yeah, if it's Pikuach Nevesh or Suffolk Pikuach Nevesh, then they eat on Yom Kippur. That's easy, right? The Pesach's easy? Very good. Now if I ask you, okay, now how do you figure out whether it's Pikuach Nevesh or not?
Doctor?
Which doctor?
The person's doctor who they would normally consult out.
Why their doctor? What about your doctor? What about the consensus of doctors? Do you have to read papers?
I mean, if you don't have time, if it's life and death, I would assume...
It's a week before Sukkot. It's a week before Yom Kippur.
I mean,
you have a week to research.
I would say that their default is to go to their doctor.
Ah, but is this obvious? No, you see what I just did? I said it's very clear, right? It's very clear the theoretical psak,
right?
Except it gets very unclear very quickly because who makes the decision, right? Who fills in the material?
It's a judgment call.
By who?
By the poser. I mean, ultimately,
is it? So Moshe said it's not. Moshe says that the way that the posig should do it is the posig should say, let me talk to the patient's doctor.
I let the patient
choose the mitziot, right? You said it's the posig's decision. Those are different.
The same way that a shayla is to the local rabbi and not to what's the consensus among rebbeim and posgim. If no, I'm asking my shayla to this rabbi, he'll ask a shayla to this doctor.
So that's what you assume. But my point is that this is complicated because I know posgim who say what Moshe said originally, which is when someone comes to them before Yom Kippur, they say, listen, who's your doctor? I don't know the Mitzvah, I'm not a doctor. But whoever you trust, I'm willing to talk with them and I will follow my psak based on the doctor you choose. I know Poskim will do that. I know other Poskim will say, no. A psak is, I have to make the decision. So I get three doctors that I like and I choose Rove of them. I know Poskim will do that. Right? And this is an easy shayla, right? Easy, right? Let me take a more serious one. Okay, land for peace, right? First you have to figure out if it's mutter to trade land, even if it's a case of Pikuach Nefesh. But then you have to figure out, is this political move going to save lives or risk lives? Okay, good. Who makes that decision?
Security experts.
Why?
They know best.
Do they?
You would assume that experts
would they? Okay, you live in a democratic society. How many people in the Democratic Society would be okay? Yep, let's leave it to the generals and let's not leave it to the electoral system, to the democratic system at all. None of us have any say.
We don't. We have our own system.
Very good. So some people are going to tell you, ask the generals and the security experts, and some people are going to say, no, this is a democracy. Our lives are at stake, right? Have a referendum or ask elected officials. Look how many times you have a machloket between, does this go back to the, right? Does it go back to the elected officials or does it go to the lifetime security experts? These are open political questions. Now, a posig is something going to be stuck in the middle of this and be like, well, you asked me whether you're allowed to do it, and now what am I supposed to do?
But here's the thing.
So a posig could say, it's not my job, right? You figure it out. And other poskim will say, what do you mean? Only me. I know the mitzvah better than they do because I have Ruach HaKodesh, because I whatever.
Rabbi Zirin.
What?
Here's the thing. So a poskim only has authority insofar as other people are willing to do what they say.
Sure.
If people come to a poskim with a question,
they do.
If they come to a poskim with a question, clearly they're investing that poskim with authority.
And in that situation, the POSIC has to answer. So whatever they have to do, maybe the POSIC wants to talk to some generals. Maybe
but you see, that's a different model. One is to say, we completely say, the POSIC says, here's the guidelines, let the experts decide. Then there's the model, which is, no. The POSIC may not be the expert, but...
he's got to get the answer.
Correct. Think about a court case in America or Canada, right? Think about a court case in America, okay? Right? Is the judge or the jury qualified? Are they experts in
medicine,
in fingerprinting?
No.
Yeah. And how many expert witnesses do they get?
Usually one.
No, they don't. The defense gets one and the prosecution gets one, right? To support their case. And then who ends up making the decision?
The jury.
Oh, but they're not the experts but they're making the decision, aren't they?
Right?
Well,
that's what the party stood before. Whoever you come before with.
I understand, but that's exactly my point. So the model you're presenting, which is reasonable, is that the POSIC doesn't directly do it, but the POSIC might still have to be the final answer, right? Might have to decide between the experts because the question came to him. Another model is what Moshe said before, which is no, ani lo shayach, right? Which is, I refuse to weigh in. I'm going to thrust it back at you and say, here's the guidelines, bring it to your POSIC, to your doctor, right? Or have your doctor call me, right?
Well,
that's different.
Call me the same thing.
No, it's not, because you're telling the patient to choose the doctor, and you will do whatever that doctor says.
Yeah,
that's a different model, right? Okay, so this is when it's not complicated, okay? Now, the last thing that makes it more complicated is, what if there are extenuating circumstances? So now, extenuating circumstances, why should that change it? Well, it clearly does. You read Psak all the time. This is Osir unless there's Hefsid Mamon. Or, Bisharat Chak, you can be Meikil. What? So now, what is extenuating circumstances? So now, the way Rav Lichtenstein used to put it, I'll give you the simple version of it now, is that he said, well, since law, as we already said, is not 100-0, so let's say it's 51-49. Okay? I could see it either way. I mean, maybe I'm slightly more convinced of one way than the other, but like, not in any significant way. How much pressure is going to take? How much pressure is going to take for me to say, you know what, you can rely on the 49?
Not
so much. What if you come to me and you say, what if I come to you and I say, I'm like 90% sure this is right. I mean, I could sort of see the other one, like if you push me against a wall, right? So then what?
You have to push him against a wall.
Very good. Right? And if it's 60-40, right? You understand. Now, where do these... Now, you'll say pressure. Why should halacha bend to pressure? And the answer is very simply...
It always has.
And B, because halacha itself values these pressures. These aren't extraneousism, right? Hefsid mamon is something that halacha gives way to. Sharatcha, kavra briot, chilul Hashem. Right? I give you a bunch of examples.
What's the policy, right?
What? I gave you policy, right? Slippery slope, right? I gave you... religious hubris or arrogance, right? Where we say you shouldn't take on a chumrah because it's going to, right? It is presumptuous, right? All types of factors. So if you have the most plausible psak and there's no counter pressure, so then you only have to go through the nightmare of assessing the mitziut, right? And then you can try to paskin. But if there is pressure, so then you need to go back to the sugya and say, how does halacha recognize the values that are putting pressure on me now? And how much flexibility do I actually think is in the halachic system? Meaning, do I think this is a 100-0 case, or do I think it's a 51-49, or do I think it's a 70-30? Right? So if I wanted to summarize what's happening in Psak, it's something like this. Every post is going to sit there in their own way. Again, now, will the conclusions look vastly different because every one of these has 200 places where they could differ? Mm-hmm. Of course, right? But at some level, every POSIG is trying to figure out what the primary sources say, even though they might disagree with what the primary sources are, trying to figure out what the history of Psak dictates, though. They might argue how to give weight to that, how much weight to it, who counts. Things like that. They had to figure out custom, but again, different balls are going to give way to custom. What counts as custom? Is it any minhag or only minhag that are sanctioned by the chamin? Then they have to assess the mitziut, which sometimes is easy, And sometimes it's hard. And sometimes, by the way, is like, forget things that are like charged. Like, whether you have to check your vegetables for bugs, the halacha is very clear. If it's muhzak bitolaim, which is it is presumed to have bugs, then you basically can't eat it. If it is a miut she'ino matsui, if it's rare minority, then you don't even have to check. And if it's a miut hamatsui, it's a minority of cases, but it's common-ish, then you have to check, but you're allowed to eat it, right? That, the basic framework, pretty much everyone agrees on.
If it's
muhzak bitolaim, it's presumed to have bugs.
Even if you check it?
You not, can't always check it. Certain things are basically impossible. But, right, now, the basic framework is easy. The metziut is a nightmare. Both because the metziut is hard, and B, because it's hard to define that. Meaning, the ranges go from, what is a miut hamatsui? So the positions range from 4% to 49% in poskim. To some poskim who say it's not a number at all. It's, if you would find a bug, would you feel surprised or not? Right? And then, let's say you take 10%, okay? Then there's a machloket in poskim, 10% of what? 10% of bites, 10% of units you check at a time, 10% of wholesale, right? So you have to figure out the mitzvah, you have to figure out the standards for the mitzvah. All these things are very complicated. And then all this is further complicated because of their extenuating circumstances. You go back and you reassess. Now, once you get to all that, then you can come up with a psak. And of course, this doesn't even take into account that you actually have to analyze the sugya. We just talked like what you're doing. Then you actually have to analyze the sugya, right? You could diverge on that. Now, I gave you, and I guess we'll look at it more next time, but I gave you a lot of text, so that's okay, right? As I gave you, as an example of this, but I'll just give you the minute summary so that you see it as we go in, the Hakdama of the Beit Yosef to the Beit Yosef, the Hakdama of Moshe Israelis to the Darkei Moshe, and the Yamshel Shlomo critiquing the existence of Shulchan Aruch. all contemporaneous, and they each present a different model of psak, right? Now, we'll see this inside, but if I asked you, which of these, what type of posek is the Beit Yosef? What is the factor in his life that matters most? Very good. Very, very good. It's precedent, right? It's what other poskim said. That's what he says. Yeah. Right? Very good, right? Without even going into complexity, right? He at least tells you that his psak is majority of Rambam, Riff, and Rush. And then he explains to you, so why doesn't he care about the Gemara?
Because the Rambam and Riff are on the Gemara.
And he has another claim.
It's not right.
No. Not at all. That even if he thinks he has a kasha on them, he assumes they're smarter than him, and any kasha he would have, they must have thought of and answered. So even if he doesn't know why the Gemara could say this, he's willing to rely on their, right, on them, that they understood the sugya better than him. Which means that even though in theory he'll tell you he's passing like the Gemara, again, this is why it just seems to be an ontological, right? Like, at a fundamental level, what does he think he's doing? And then practically, how does he go about it? He'll tell you at a fundamental level, I care about the Gemara.
Sometimes you have to translate shallows from...
100%.
Impossible to apply.
Again, this is not black and white, and that's why we have to read through it. But Big Adol, he's a precedent posek. That's the number one factor. What about Rama?
Minhag.
Yeah, very good. Minhag, because as we'll see, in addition to... What? Because what are some of the most important books that he quotes?
I don't know.
Sifrei Minhagim, Maharil, the Minhagim of the Maharil, Minhag, right? He cares a lot about Minhag Ashkenaz. That's very important to him. And then we'll see Yamshel Shlomo. Why did he hate Shulchan Aruch? Yes, that's exactly why. Because he said, what are you, crazy? Read the Gemara. Right, what is this? And that's why we'll see. Again, we'll look at this inside hopefully next week and get, you know, run through it. But just because I want you to see it, he says a lot of people, their hero in life is the Rambam. He didn't like the Rambam very much, right? His hero in life is? No. I mean, yes, but no. The Baal HaTosfot. The Baal HaTosfot. Why? As we'll see, because he says, I love the Baal HaTosfot. Why do I love the Baal HaTosfot? Because their goal was to make the Gemara work together, right? For him, the Tosfot is the model. You should be looking not at the Rambam, because the Rambam was trying to get you to follow him. He doesn't want you to follow him. He wants each posek to follow the Gemara, right? And I'm going to use these three major posekim, who are all contemporaneous, to show you how, in practice, even though they all agree the Gemara is important, previous Rishonim are important, and Minhag is important, when it comes to it is actually possible to identify very clearly what factor is dominant in their practical psak. Again, this is not a fundamental question.
Also,
yeah.
There's also, I think, a difference between a commentary on Shas and a halachic.
So Yamshur Shlomo is writing a halachic commentary on Shas.
Right. But
what's the difference?
He says no, and he doesn't believe there should be a code.
Like, Tosfos and Rambam have a qualitative difference in terms of what they're writing.
Sure, but the Yamshur Shlomo doesn't think that codes should exist. Like, codes. This is the law. He doesn't think that should exist.
But the Mishnah literally does. That's what the Mishnah is.
Oh, really? The Mishnah feels like...
That it's completely... what's the word?
Is there anything
by itself?
Okay.
Where somebody doesn't disagree with it?
And the Mishnah is not a code in the way the Rambam is. It tells opinions. The Rambam here and there says V'yesh Omrim, but 99% of the time he does it. Yes?
This is a question. Do you ever think about including like a forward-looking category? Because I feel like these are all like backwards-looking categories, right? Like, what is the custom? What is precedent? What is the Gemara?
How will this affect future?
But I feel like to be honest, no matter what we say, exactly, no matter what people say, at least for me, maybe the main thing that drives me is some sense of Judaism. I can't put my finger on it, but it's not the same as the Gemara. It's not the same.
So I wonder. I mean,
and it's
so at some level, policy. So at some level, that's under policy, right?
Right.
Where poskim, right? Because that I would put in the extenuating circumstances that under the policy slippery slope type things, where poskim will say, listen, what? Right. Where I have a policy, and I gave you as an example religious Zionism, right? Where poskim will think that the state has religious value,
yeah.
Right? Tend to poskim in a particular way that will enable the state to exist, right? So yeah, I think is a policy decision, right?
Meaning forward looking.
Correct, but that I put here in the policy thing. But yes, I agree. What? Well, it might be. We'll have to get there. Yeah, depends. Okay. I know you're all a fan of that. Okay. I know that he said that to me yesterday. And he said that to me yesterday. Yeah. But one of the Tamidim, the Chazon Ish, said he asked the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish said, yes, that is exactly what I did. No, literally, that's what he says. Right? That's what he said. I will read you very quickly because I'm already over time. But just because, you know, you're saying it, again, I'm not saying the Chazon Ish said this because I don't know I wasn't there.
Right.
But one of the Chazon Ish's Talmidim actually has this crazy thing.
That's
one second. It's
the Torah scroll thing.
What?
It's the Torah scroll thing.
No, he says it the follows. Okay, I'll end with this. The Chazon Ish, so one of the Talmidim, the Chazon Ish, says like this. So Chachni Pam. This is a Talmud of Tzvi Yehuda. He's a Talmud of the Chazon Ish. I was once talking with the Chazon Ish. I don't remember when. Kasher Rav Gorin Persein Ma'amar B'Sinai Al-Chashmal. When Rav Gorin had published an article about electricity, Zertiach HaChazon Ish. What's Zertiach? Made him furious. The Chazon Ish was furious. Shalti Oto, and I said to him, Ma Yish B'Ma'amar Hazeh Shekol Kach Yertiach Otcha? What's in this article that makes you so angry? Hu Lo Tzodek, what, he's not right? Ma Ta Rotzeh Mimenu, what do you want from him? So he's wrong. What is so angry? Az Hu Amar Li, so he said the following. Hataud kan dola, the error is great. Ha'olam toeh, the world is wrong. Ha'olam choshev sha'isur sha'chashma b'shabbat mevusas. The world thinks that the prohibition of electricity is based. V'tzabrich lechapes mikorot kedei la'atiroto. And you have to find sources to make it permitted. Ze lo nachon, that's not true. Ha'isur legamrei lo mevusas. The isur is completely not based. V'tzabrich limso mikorot kedei la'atiroto. You have to find reasons to base it. Kahu Amarli. That's what he said to me. Hu Amar to be Yiddish. He said it in Yiddish. Der Oilem Hotetos. Zain Minin Oz Der Isder Is Borer. Un Merdev Zuchen Hatorim. Ibor Siz Nishtazoi. Der Isder Is Nisht Borer. Un Medrev Zuchen Isurim. Whatever that means. Asha Altiuta. When I said Lama. Why? Hu Amar Lacha. Hu Amar. And he said Tair Lacha. Imagine. B'yameinu, in our day, k'shachola technologia u'pulat al chashmal, everything runs electricity. Im natir chashmal, if we made electricity mutter, t'elanu Shabbat, we'd have Shabbat. Kach omar li b'feirush, That's what he told me explicitly. Hu gila gisha mena hilchatit. He revealed a meta halachic perspective. Kshu matzai that din boneh, and then when he found the building, zaya mamatz hahiyuri shalo limso mashu. That was his right. How do you translate here? In the Greek sense, he matzu mamatz hahiyuri. Yeah.
What do you call it? Isn't there? There's a thing.
Whatever.
There's a thing.
Shehu atzmo b'libo b'nei knew in his heart of hearts yadasha einainu hegyoni. He knew it wasn't logical. Hachazonish amar al say azeb akshanut, and he was stubborn. Kizen nagab bevateinu. So it could be right, but that's a policy decision, right?
Isn't there a whole thing about eating each other?
I'm not posking like I'm just telling you. It's one of the greatest passages ever written. Okay.